Broadcasting from high atop Rocky Road in Moab, Utah, this is KZMU News. I'm Emily Arnson. On the program today, we have the weekly newsreel, where we check in with reporters on their latest stories from the Moab area. Today, we discuss construction on the LaSalle Loop Road. We also talk about the outcome of a lawsuit filed by local OHV businesses suing the county and the city for damages. We also touch on the Youth Garden Project's takeover of the Moab Community Gardens and a possible esports team at Grand County High School. Sophia Fisher, reporter with the Times Independent, starts off with updates about closures along the LaSalle Loop Road.
I'm sure folks know it's already an extremely roadwork heavy year in Moab, and we do have one more road project coming up, and that will be a 2-year project on the LaSalle Loop Road in San Juan County.
Yeah, what are they going to be doing up at the Loop Road?
They will be primarily just repaving and regrading the road. As anyone who's driven that road knows, there are a lot of potholes, not a lot of updated markings. You know, the pavement is crumbling at the edge of the road and in the middle of the road in a lot of places. So generally repaving, you know, adding kind of new signage and markings, redoing some drainage structures, just making it a better road.
Okay. So is the road going to be closed while they're doing construction?
There will be closures, yes. So it's overall, this project is covering about 12 miles of the road from Old Airport Road in Spanish Valley up to just past Geyser Pass Road. This year, however, they're only covering kind of the eastern portion of that, which is from Hardgrave Road up to about Geyser Pass. So this year, starting in mid-May, there will be weekday closures from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. along that portion of the road.
Yeah, and I've driven this road because it's like a really scenic drive. But are there people that use this road for other more practical reasons?
Absolutely, yeah. Tons of recreation, but there are, you know, several local concessionaires that run shuttles, especially up the Geyser Pass Road for Whole Enchilada Trail. And there's also private property along the road as well. So Chris Cartwright, who's a spokesperson for the project, said that he'll be working with both local businesses and, you know, those private property owners to talk about access and make sure that they can retain enough access, you know, for their activities.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention about that?
I would say that if you are not a concessionaire and you don't own property along that section of road, generally the recommendation is, you know, if you want to get up to the mountains on weekdays between 8:30 and 5:30, is to take the northern part of the loop road through Castle Valley. It's definitely a headache. You know, I spoke with Brian Murdoch, who works at the U.S. Forest Service. He acknowledged it's a headache, but also, you know, anyone who's been on this part of the road knows how much it needs the work.
Yeah. Otherwise, this week you reported on an OHV lawsuit that has been many years in the making. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so this lawsuit, it was filed in 2022 against the city and the county and several individual defendants by about a dozen local OHV off-highway vehicle businesses. A majority of the lawsuit has been dismissed, actually. All but one claim has been dismissed by a judge.
Okay, so these OHV businesses, they were claiming that restrictions that the county and the city was putting on noise or other restrictions that they were putting on OHV use was damaging their business, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah, and so what were some of their main complaints in this lawsuit?
Yeah, they had a lot of complaints about, yeah, the suite of regulations that the county and the city had enacted, mainly the county, I should say, in 2020 and 2021. They argued that they were, you know, onerous, too broad, too sweeping, discriminatory against OHVs as opposed to, say, other types of motor vehicles, and argued that they cost the plaintiffs, these businesses, at least $1 million in lost revenue and lost clientele.
Mm-hmm. So all of these claims that have been dismissed in this lawsuit, it's basically saying we're not going to pay you back these damages. You're not going to win this sort of like legal argument that there were damages. Is that basically what this means?
Yes, it's actually really interesting. The stage for this lawsuit was actually set almost before it was filed. So there was a prelude to this lawsuit filed in March of 2022. You know, these plaintiffs, these businesses and Blue Ribbon Coalition, which is a motorized advocacy group, also one of the plaintiffs, they basically told the city and the county, like, hey, we're pursuing this suit. The same day that happened, the state of Utah, the state legislature, actually passed a bill forcing Grand County to roll back most of its regulations and restrictions. So because of that, I spoke with Ben Burr at Blue Ribbon Coalition, you know, because of that early relief, the arguments for this $1 million plus in damages were actually weakened quite a bit because those regulations actually had only existed for 6 or 8 months.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask about that House bill? So that wasn't specific to Grand County. Obviously, this is like a statewide bill that was passed, but was it sort of targeting this problem in Grand County?
Oh, it was. And the architect, or rather, I should say, the person who inserted the amendment, Kurt Bramble, I believe, said on the record on the floor that it had to do with some regulations enacted by Grand County.
And did you talk to anyone at the county about what this means for the county, having all of these claims dismissed?
Yeah, I spoke with Grand County Attorney Stephen Stocks. He said he viewed the order, which was passed down by a judge March 28th, as a big win. And to be clear, too, I think plaintiffs and defendants had been kind of mutually agreeing that the claims weren't worth pursuing. The judge just kind of signed off on it. But Stock said it was a big win. You know, the county and the city are no longer facing, you know, up to $1 million payment in damages. That's no longer a threat. You know, 11 of 12 claims were dismissed. And then individual defendants also were dismissed from the suit. Those included the members of the Moab City Council and Grand County Commission at the time of these regulations, as well as some high-ranking staffers. So those are all gone. Now the lawsuit is only with the city and the county.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of these restrictions that were placed on the businesses, they had to do with noise level, they had to do with the size of a fleet could be of OHVs. Mm-hmm. But we still have a noise ordinance in the city and in the county, correct?
Yes. Generally, that's set at about 92 decibels for motor vehicles. 92 decibels is measured 20 inches from an exhaust outlet. But the city and the county measures do, you know, vary in some other ways as mm-hmm. well.
Has there been any sort of movement to like reverse what the House bill set in motion in 2022?
Oh, like kind of recreate some restrictions or regulations? You know, the county did open up a discussion about, you know, how best to deal with noise and noise pollution, especially from OHVs after, you know, a lot of these regulations were rolled back. But as far as I know, that conversation hasn't really resurfaced since mid-2022. And there has been a turnover in, you know, a county attorney and a lot of other elected official positions since then. So as far as I can tell, it's been kind of all quiet on that front, mm-hmm. so to speak, since mm-hmm. the middle of 2022.
Okay, we're getting really in the nitty-gritty with this one, so I think we can probably move on. You also reported this week that Youth Garden Project is taking over the community gardens in Moab. Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell us some more about that?
Yeah, really exciting news there. Youth Garden Project this year acquired Moab Community Gardens, which is about a six-year-old, previously all-volunteer-run collection of gardens with about 30 plots throughout Moab. I spoke with Emily Robertson, the executive director of YGP, and she's really excited about it. And right now there's not going to be like any change to the structure or functioning of these gardens. You know, Emily just said they're just trying to make sure things go smoothly this year. But the reason they took it over is because the existing manager, Becky Mann, accepted a job out of state. So she had to leave and mm-hmm. wanted to find like a safe new kind of management structure for this wonderful, very popular set of gardens.
Yeah. And did Robinson say, are these gardens ready to be, you know, claimed for the spring? Have people already started planting in them?
Yeah, the deadline has unfortunately passed for a garden plot. I think they are all booked up this year, but you can email Emily if you do want to be added to a wait list. They are very, very popular, which is one of the reasons it's so exciting that they're going to continue to exist.
Got it. Okay. What else happened this week that you wanted to talk to us about?
Yeah, interesting sports news. Esports are going to be an officially sanctioned activity in the state of Utah, starting with the 2025 to 2026 school year.
What are esports?
Yeah, so electronic sports that can include kind of competitive gaming, whether on teams or individually.
Okay, so Grand County High School, they're thinking about possibly adding an esports team?
Yeah, that could happen. I know that they had a club for esports, but the faculty advisor had to leave for personal reasons. However, the club is still, I think, looking for a new faculty member, and that could eventually evolve into a competitive team.
And does this mean anything for other kinds of sports too?
Yeah, so the UHSAA announcement that esports are, you know, now an officially approved activity within Utah high schools, that actually came out of a legal settlement, most likely, that was settled with a few different kind of Wasatch Front school districts as part of the settlement for those school districts, which were trying to get girls tackle football actually sanctioned as an activity. There was an easier avenue created for UHSAA to approve new emerging sports or emerging activities, which might be things that, you know, traditional athletes or traditionally like athletic kids might be able to participate in.
Sophia Fisher, reporter with the Times Independent. Find more stories at moabtimes.com. Today, we also welcome a new guest, Kenny Fallon. Kenny recently started a monthly newsletter called the Green River Observer, and we'll be adding him to our newsreel once a month. We start off giving an overview of his new publication.
There was a city council meeting in early January. There were a few items on the agenda talking about upcoming mostly lithium and uranium mining and processing projects, there were some people in attendance that were kind of caught off guard by some of this and were kind of talking about how can we stay more in touch with what the city government is pursuing and going and what's going on just in town in general.
Mm-hmm.
And an idea that was thrown out there was maybe like an email newsletter or something. So after that meeting, I was thinking like, oh, I could do that. And if there's enough interest, then other people can get involved and, you know, we could have this going. So Green River has no local mail delivery. So everyone has a post office box. So I just made a almost like a church bulletin style, just 3-page newsletter, mostly summing up city council and planning commission meetings and sent it to every PO box in town.
Yeah. So you have this printed newsletter. You also have a digital version of it. Goes out once a month.
Yes.
More or less. End of the month, beginning of the month. When can people expect it?
Right now, it's the beginning of the month after the month it covers. I'm trying to figure out how it can pay for itself and ideally pay, you know, me and contributors. So it's at least covering every month.
Great.
Yeah.
And if people who don't live in Green River want to find your writing online, where can they find it?
They can go to thegreenriverobserver.substack.com and you can subscribe for email updates, but you can also pay $5 a month and I'll mail you a print newsletter as well.
You will be hopefully a monthly contributor to the newsreel, in addition to our other local reporters who come on this show and talk about what's the goings on around town and elsewhere. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So there was a city council meeting recently and the sheriff gave a year in review for 911 call breakdowns and also explaining some other stuff. Yeah. What else did the sheriff report at this meeting?
I guess some of the notable things were that there was more 911 calls than there ever have been, you know, for the county. There's no Green River City Police, so all calls go to the county sheriff's department. And we have right now, I believe, one deputy that lives full time and is on in Green River and is on call there.
What was the number one reason for making calls this year?
Oh, well, the biggest stat was 911 hangups. But the next one was citizen assistance. So I think not non-emergency assistance.
Okay. Did the sheriff give any breakdown of how many calls go to Green River versus the rest of Emory County?
Yeah, it really kind of varies. Green River is only 8% of the whole county. But for stray animals, for instance, there were 292 calls overall, and then 16 of those were for Green River. There's also sometimes some like confusion over whether it's Highway Patrol or the Sheriff's Department that takes care of stray animals. And I'll tell you, there's plenty of stray cats, so it's just kind of an ongoing issue. I guess one of the bigger things that he focused on for Green River specifically, because we have a Greyhound stop and we're along I-70, is that they've done several illegal drug busts in the county, or in town. Wanted to talk about mostly was there was over a pound of methamphetamine hidden in children's toys that were being shipped to East Carbon, but they were initially caught a year ago on a routine roadside stop.
Okay. Did they give any statistics about how many drug busts they made this year?
No.
Just that one notable one where they caught it. But that,
yeah.
If it was in the mail, it wasn't a traffic drug bust.
I think it was a traffic stop that had tipped them off this ongoing operation.
Mm-hmm.
There was also a record amount of PCP. There was 1.6 gallons of PCP that was intercepted, which apparently is just an insane amount. Like the DEA didn't actually believe that they had gotten that amount, and they
wow.
were like, no, this is how much.
Wow.
And so that was from either a traffic stop or like a hotel bust. I can't remember which one.
Okay. So a lot of these drugs do kind of go through Green River or around Green River, but many of them, did the sheriff say if the final destination is ever typically Green River?
They were saying it most of the time is not. They're just using I-70 as kind of an isolated interstate.
Mm-hmm.
On the Greyhound, he said like a lot of them they suspect are coming from, for instance, Denver out to California, going the full route. But because they don't check at each stop if, you know, if someone on the bus is attached to that luggage, it's somewhat of a loophole that some people take advantage of to transport drugs that way.
Got it. Right. Because you could sort of put your package on the bus, get off the bus, and your package could be delivered without you.
And if they find it in Green River, they don't necessarily find the person
right.
associated with that.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So there were a lot of people at this city council meeting who are kind of opposed to the Greyhound bus being in Green River. Can you talk about some of their opinions?
Yeah. So there was concern that, but of course, when you say stuff like this, it's like, oh, well, is that a conduit for drugs that wouldn't actually, you know, ordinarily come through there? and you know, what kind of people is it bringing in to Green River that wouldn't ordinarily be there? And the sheriff kind of responded of like, you know, it is kind of a, you know, a mixed bag. You know, it brings in, it creates things, situations that may not ordinarily happen. But one point he made is that the drugs are going somewhere, and if they get them in Green River, then they don't get to that place. And then also, if they successfully get to wherever their final destination is, they might still eventually end up in Green River. So he was kind of an advocate for continuing to be able to, like, make these interceptions and these seizures, even if they weren't destined for Green River delivery.
Was there anything else that happened at the city council meeting that you wanted to mention?
Sure. Yeah, the city manager, Tyler Hunt, kind of gave a review of the city's 2023 fiscal year audit. It was kind of like a state of the city finances. And it's pretty typical stuff. There weren't really many big changes. One notable thing was that there was a $50,000 decline in property tax revenue, even though there weren't any like very large businesses that shut down during that time. And like across the state, a lot of people in town saw their property tax rates jump a lot in the past year. So Tyler Hunt is talking with the state office right now to try to figure out, you know, is it a typo or is there something else going on, just to make sure that all the taxes are accounted for.
Okay, mysterious disappearance of $50,000. The West Wind did close, which is like one business, but yeah.
Right, but it was just the restaurant aspect, right. And the liquor store as well. So, So yeah, we'll see. Maybe that does account for it, but it'd be surprising.
Okay. Yeah, were there other things that happened this month in Green River that you wanted to share with us? There was an upcoming event that you wanted to mention.
Yeah. Yeah, coming up on April 16th, there's going to be a soil health field day that's being put on by the Natural Resources Soil Conservation District or Council, something like that. And they'll be doing demonstrations of no-till farming, rainwater simulation, and kind of like sustainable farming practices. That'll be at 315 Hastings Road from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. on the 16th.
Kenny Fallon, editor and publisher of the Green River Observer. Find more stories at thegreenriverobserver.substack.com. You can find the pieces that were mentioned today in the show notes on our website, kzmu.org, or wherever you listen to the KZMU News podcast. As always, thanks for tuning in and supporting KZMU, community-powered radio.